Good evening. My name is Sheila Armstrong, and I'm an alcoholic. And in my neck of the woods, which is Oklahoma, we say our sobriety date. My sobriety date is December 15th of 1984. And I come from the Phoenix Group in Norman, Oklahoma. It is at 227 West Main. If you're ever in Norman, Oklahoma, we have meetings every night there, and we'd love you to come. I want to thank Penny for picking me up, and Tracy. And I want to thank the group for, bringing me here. It's kind of nice little old meeting y'all got here. It's an absolute honor and a privilege, and Penny and I are both sponsored by the same sponsor, and my sponsor is Peg Martin, and she lives in Bellevue, Nebraska, and, you know, I just think she's just the best sponsor anybody could ever have, you know, and we're blessed, and I don't usually ever speak for anybody, but I think I can say that for Penny, that we're blessed to have a sponsor that has 34 years and is active member. I mean, tonight I know exactly where she's at, you know. She's either speaking somewhere or she's in a meeting, you know, because she's accountable. And that's what I've been taught in Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to wish all the celebrants happy birthday, you know. Tracy got to have her 1 year. And, you know, it's just, I was told early on in sobriety that it was not a celebration of the individual, that it was a celebration that Alcoholics Anonymous works. You know, and that keeps me as a drunk humble, you know, because we'll start thinking we're very special people, you know how we are, and or how I am. My ego gets real big, and I think I've really actually done something, and, you know, and I'm brought back to realize that, you know, that God and AA together are incredible, and that they can help keep a drunk like me sober, and that's nothing short of miraculous. The program is absolutely nothing short of miraculous to me. I've seen so many incredible miracles, and I've got to experience them myself. And I, again, want to thank all of you. I went to dinner tonight. We had a good time. Had Thai food. You know, we don't have a lot of Thai restaurants in Oklahoma. And but we've got chicken fry that would just curl your toes. So I was born in Oklahoma. And I was born in Oklahoma City, and I was born to two normal alcoholic parents. They did normal alcoholic things, like get divorced before I ever remember they were married. And I have a brother who's 13 months younger than I am. My mother was an alcoholic. She was a nurse. I thought she was the most beautiful woman in the world. I loved her. I wanted to be like her when I grew up. She was fun, she was exciting to be around, and she was brilliant. She was just brilliant. And she was a blackout drunk. We were left a lot of places, and she would go party for days and days at a time. She would go on long periods of drinking and leave us places and forget where she left us and with whom, and then find us. And, you know, and it's just alcoholism. It's just alcoholism. And one time we were staying with my grandmother. A lot of times we stayed with my grandmother, and the social workers came, and we went to live in a foster home in Yukon, Oklahoma, and we stayed in that foster home for a while, and my mother would visit every once in a while. We'd get to go visit my mom, and when I was 7 years old, my father, who I had not known, I really did not know my father. I met him again when I was seven, because they divorced so early I didn't really remember him, and he lived in California, and he had got wind that we were in a foster home, and he came in the door, and my father was a big man. He had a big voice, and he was kind of like Popeye, you know, big arms, big hands, and a big voice. And he walked in, and he said, "Hi, I'm Dad." And we didn't get along from the get go. And my brother really liked him, and I thought, well, good for them. So we went to California. Went to California with my dad. He had married a nice Mexican lady, and I would never see my mother again. I would not see my mother again until I was 19 years old, you know, and that's alcoholism. And we got off the airplane, and there were, you know, it was a nice Mexican greeting, about 700,000 relatives, you know, and they're all pinching and hugging and kissing, and I thought, this could be fun. You know, they were happy, and they were partiers, and we ate and drank, and, I mean, that's what we did. It was, you know, fiesta, you know, and you had fun, and I loved being around, and they were a family, and they were warm, and unfortunately, alcoholism was there, too, and you know, my father and my tío Mondo would go to the racetrack, and they would pass out on somebody else's car, and people would have to go get them, and and then there'd be that tension that goes on in the house. And I thought, but it felt so familiar, you know, it just started feeling so familiar. And then, unfortunately, that marriage did not last. And one morning we got up and went to go live in Arizona with my aunt and uncle, you know, and I would not see that lady again until I was 18 years old, you know, and that's alcoholism. And today, you know, I know in my heart that everyone did the very best they could. And I don't just give it lip service. I know it in my heart because of this magnificent program and because of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and sponsorship. And going places that didn't want to go, doing things that I don't want to do, wearing dresses and skirts behind this podium, you know. I'll tell you, I have tough sponsorship. I've always had it. I've been blessed to have it. Because when I came in, I had the worst attitude ever. I was mean, and I was real sick. You know, I was real sick. And because of all the things that you have all taught me and you've passed on to me and you've given to me in that book and all the things that people have told me to do, you know, I am okay with a lot of that stuff today. You know, I've had healings that I never ever even knew I could have healing. I didn't know my heart could heal. I thought it would be broken forever. You know, and that's not true. That this is Alcoholics Anonymous. Anything can happen here. Just absolutely anything. We went to live in Arizona, and then my father got sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 10 years old. And it would change my life forever. And I'm so overwhelmed when I think of him getting sober in that 12-step house in L.A. You know, and we came back to Los Angeles, and he and his sponsor made a decision that, you know, for right now, that he could not take care of us. He was living in a 12-step house, and that we would go in another foster home for a while. You know, and I know what a hard decision that is because I've sat with women who've had to put their children in foster homes as a sponsor or go to visit them. You know, I know what goes on in those kids, you know, but I also get to see the moms get sober because I get to sponsor people. And then I get to watch them pick their kids up for good, you know. Oh, and I'm bawling. I mean, I'm a mess. And they go, is she all right? You know, the moms are pretty good. I'm a wreck, you know. And it's just because it's so touching because, you know, of Alcoholics Anonymous today, so many women don't have to do that, you know, and it's wonderful. You know, I wished my mom could have done this deal, you know. I wish she could have, but she had to walk her road and I had to walk mine. When the foster home we went to live in was a black foster home. We were supposed to stay there for 2 weeks until I guess they could find a white foster home to put us in. We ended up living there 3.5 years. And it turned out to be one of the most incredible, wonderful experiences of my life. My foster mother and father loved me and my brother like we were their very own. They had their own child. Who lived, her son, and more kids kept coming to the home, and we had a little Sioux Indian boy, and then we had, Hilda, she was a little Mexican girl, and then there was me and my brother, and, you know, we sit around and eat lunch, and it looked like a meeting of the Junior United Nations, let me tell you what. You know, and we didn't know prejudice at that table in that home. We didn't know that. But unfortunately, the world knew that, and we would go out in the world, and people would say things. They'd say things to her. You know, her friends would say, why don't you watch kids of your own race or take care of your own kind? And then, you know, and people would say mean things to me and my brother and Hilda. And we'd come home and I'd go, what is a honky? You know, and what's a cracker? You know, and she'd say, Sheila, that's ignorant. And I'd say, okay. And I'd go back to school and I'd say, that's ignorant. You know, and then I'd get kicked and we'd fight and it'd be beautiful. Teacher'd say, Sheila started it, and I probably did, you know, you know, it was funny. And you know, I look back on it and my foster mother tried to give me, you know, values and love and we'd go to Walmart, well, it was Kmart, it's Walmart in Oklahoma, but we'd go to Kmart and she was real big on socks and underwear. You got to have tons of socks and underwear. And so, you know, cause we didn't have much when we got there and she ran out and you had to have underwear for every day of the week. And so we'd all be following her, and we called her Mom. You know, I still call her Mom today, Mom Betty. And we'd be going, Mom, Mom. You know, and people looking at her very strange. She said, she's been very busy lady. You know, and she'd say, come on, my blue-eyed babies. And we'd just, okay, Mom. You know, and people, oh, gosh. And, you know, she has pictures of my children and all her children up on her mantle. And when her neighbors would come over, she moved to North Carolina, and they'd come over to, you know, be the new neighbors. And she'd say, and these are my children. They go, oh, and she would never explain. You know, and she just smiled. Aren't they pretty? She's got really blue eyes, you know, la, la, la. You know, she just, oh, they'd be just, their mouth would drop. She said, boy, they couldn't even drink the coffee I'd offered them, you know. She said, you could see their mind just whirling, you know, and it was just, you know, she's just an incredible lady. And I asked her one time, I said, why do you keep foster kids? And she said, because I was a foster child all my life, and I always wanted to give back what was given to me, you know, and that's what God did, you know. I believe that I used to feel so very sorry for myself when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was a very bitter, 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 bitter girl. I was angry and mean and tough and hard, and I had a chip on my shoulder. And thank God for inventory so that I could see that, you know, I felt so very sorry for myself. But through inventories and through the things that I've done in this program, I saw how many people really loved us, my brother and I, how many people tried to take care of us, how many times that there was something there, a power greater than me that loved me, and I didn't even know it. But I was so busy feeling so sorry for myself that I couldn't see those things. I couldn't see those things. My cousin used to say, you know, Sheila, you did have a tough life, you know, and I kind of felt sorry for you, but you were doing such a great job yourself. You didn't let anybody else, you know, and that's how I was just so self-absorbed early on. I went to live with my father. He met a nice lady in Alcoholics Anonymous. Unfortunately, that marriage did not work out, and we went down the street to live at my aunt's house. It was this woman's sister, and my brother and I went down there to live, and he, you know, it just worked out that way, and we were to live there, and we would drive by, you know, and my dad would be like watering the lawn, and I'd wave, and my friends say, who's that? And I go, that's my dad. And they go, your dad lives down the street from you? And I go, yeah, doesn't yours? You know, because it got to... It got to the point of the abnormal becomes normal, you know, that the big book talks about. And that was normal, and it kind of worked out better that way. My dad and I did not get along for many years. And I have not had a drink up to this point. Oh, I've had drinks, but I have not had a drunk up to this point, and I sure as heck need one, I'll tell you what. And so one of the things that I went to the prom, and... you know, it was so exciting. This is prom time of the year. I'm a manicurist today. I do prom nails. I've been doing prom nails for a month, you know, and it's like, you know, this guy, I didn't have a date, of course, for the prom, you know, the sad story. And so this guy said, well, you don't have a date and I don't have a date. You want to go? And I thought, oh, how romantic. Okay. So my aunt, she really wants to make a big deal about this. Her daughters had their dresses and everything, so we go out, and we're going to get the dress and everything, and so I said, you know, it's all exciting, and I pick out this low cut, you know, yellow kind of straight dress, you know, and she picks out this giant green dress. I mean, it had like lots of chiffon going all over, and it had one of those accordion necks, you know, oh my gosh, it went way up here, you know, and it had giant green flowers all over it. Now, there are pictures of this dress, I am not exaggerating. Then she said, and I did not want that dress, but I've been kind of caught smoking cigarettes and doing a few other little things and you know, coming in too late and not being a part of. I heard that early on. Sheila, you're never, why don't you be a part of? Why don't you be a part of? I heard that when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I heard it all my life. And so I said, well, you know, I heard an Al-Anon say this, and I love it. And her name's Pat R. She lives in Oceanside. And she said, alcoholics are like slot machines. You know, every once in a while when they pay off, you know, and they pay off big, you know. It was time for me to pay off. You know, I'd caused my aunt quite a bit of grief, you know, and she really is a good lady. So I thought, if I get the yellow dress, it'll be one more thing I want my way. But if I get the green dress, then I'm paying off. You know, it's like, oh, she's so sweet again. And then she wanted me to go to the hairdresser, her hairdresser, and her daughters weren't going to the hairdresser, which would have been my first absolute clue. And nobody went to a hairdresser because it was the 70s, and you wore your hair long and straight, maybe curled at the ends, I mean, on a big fat occasion. And so, you know, and I said, well, you know, how bad could it be? And so I went in there, and she said, what do you want? And I said, well, a little up, a little down, you know, da, da, da. You know, well, they put me under the dryer forever. My ears are still a little bit upset about it. And I was under there for a very, very long time, and then she took it out, and my hair came out this big, and it kept going, you know, hello, and my aunt came in and goes, oh, you look so beautiful, and she had this baby's breath, so then they're sticking this baby's breath all in my hair, you know, and I'm mortified, but I, you know, I don't know, what am I going to say, what am I going to do, I mean, there's 950,000 pins in my head, and I got to go here pretty quick, you know, and get the big giant green dress on, so... And so me and my hair go out to the car, you know, I get in and my aunt gets me home. I put the giant green dress on and then the date comes. My dad comes from down the street. My foster mother comes, lots of people came, you know, it was a big event. She's going to a prom. And so, three days before the prom, my date bit the head off of a live frog. Yeah, isn't that great? Got a visual? And, oh, what a guy. And he did it for a bet for $100 because he needed money to take me to the prom. You know, I would have loaned it to you, you know. He did it at school. It was a Catholic school I went to, everybody saw it, and they ran over, oh, the guy you're going to the prom with just bit the head off a live frog. And I thought I was having an out-of-body experience. I said, can anything ever go right just once? You know, it was just, oh. So anyway, so everybody's there, and they're taking the pictures, and my little cousin comes in, Kelly, and he says, hey, are you the guy that bit the head off a live frog in front of my dad? My dad's eyes roll up in his head, you know, and he had this big voice, and he goes, oh, my God, burr. And I just can tell because, see, it's like with my dad, it was love me, love me, love me, but I do everything I can to push you away. You know, love me, love me, love me, but I do everything I can to push you away. And that's how our relationship was. And I felt like, which it wasn't true, but this is what I felt like, was that one more time I don't get his approval. One more time I'm not enough. One more time da 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 da. But you know, he just thought it was disgusting, as anybody ever, you all thought it was too. So, you know, and so we whisk off to the prom, you know, and he had a car that you had to push a button. It was like a Dodge Dart. You know, everybody else got their mom and dad's Cadillac, not him. It's an antique. And I said, I bet it is. So we go off the prom, and he's got those little glasses, you know, we have champagne in the car, we have a couple of sips. It's those glasses, you know, that couldn't even get the glass ones, this kind of guy was. And the little bottom thing always falls off, you know, you're drinking it. I hate that. So anyway, he had that, and I thought, you know, I'll just have a little bit. It's no big deal. And then we went to the prom, nothing happened, but then we went to the after parties. Now that was fabulous. And so people were mixing me drinks in these little champagne glasses, you know, tequila sunrises and greyhounds and I don't know, everything you can name. And I kept thinking in my mind, I'm really not going to get drunk because, you know, it's just little. I mean, there's nothing. I was sipping those things down like that. I had 150 of those puppies. And I'll tell you what happened. My hair got long and straight. The flowers flew off the dress. And frog lips started looking really good. Yeah. Yeah, that kind of good, you know? As the big book says, we were transformed, okay? And I mean, it was like, it was incredible. That hole in my gut where the wind blew through that I've heard so many old timers talk about, it was gone. It was okay. I was okay. He was okay. He was better than okay. You know? I mean, it was like everything was just okay. And I had a good time but I blacked out. You know, I am a blackout drunk and then I pass out and I throw up and I do all that stuff because I consume mass quantities because I have what I know today is an allergy first I have the obsession, then I have the compulsion, and I have an allergy. So I am not in good shape, you know, and I keep drinking and, you know, I would drink and biker guys would drink with them and they would say, you sure do drink a lot for a little girl, you know, and it's like, you gotta look at that kind of stuff. I didn't, but you should have, you know, back then I should have. Oh, shut up, let's drink, you know, And you know, and it's like, you know, when things like that go on, they're kind of like some of the, I got to get a clue, but I don't really think. And I loved it. I love what alcohol did for me. It did wonderful things for me. It did transform me. Everything was okay. And it didn't matter that I hadn't seen my mother in all those years. Nothing, it didn't matter. It was okay. And I could live with this stuff one more time. My foster sister, Hilda, who I was still in contact with, my foster parents and stuff, she killed herself when we were 16 years old. You know, and I think the only difference between she and I is I found booze at 15. She didn't find booze, as far as we know. She wasn't on drugs. She just couldn't handle life anymore and took a gun and shot herself. She meant business. She wasn't goofing around. She meant business. You know, and I loved her so much. I loved, she had such a horrible life. And my foster parents loved her so much, you know. And she had gone to another foster home because her family, her family didn't want her living in a black foster home. They wanted her to live in a Mexican foster home. And she couldn't take the pain. She killed herself. And the difference between she and I is I found booze at 15. I believe that. I believe that today more than anything. Because I remember her and I had the same feelings. I got out of high school and, I had boys and booze. It's kind of like soup and sandwich. They just go together. Yeah. And, I had him. He was a big football something. I don't know who he was. He was a big football player. He went on to play for, played for the Oakland Raiders. He went on, he's got a Super Bowl ring. Yeah. Dumped me off, but that's okay. That's all right. I wrote about it in my fourth sin. I think I'm over it today. But, yeah. He owns a brewery, by the way. He really does. Somewhere around this area, he has a brewery. And I thought, of course he does. And so I got out of high school and I started waitressing and I got this urge to see my mother, my real mother. I went to see my real mother and it was horrible. And I'll tell you, I watched alcoholism and I look back on that. My mother was a really beautiful lady. She was only 48 when I saw her. I was thinking about the age. She was only 48 years old when I saw her when I was 19. And she was living in a Social Security building where people on Social Security lived that were older. And she was the youngest person that lived there and everybody was taking care of her. Because she was so very ill. She had lost an eye to drinking. She had gotten a fungus in her hip. She had had massive trouble with her liver. And I went to visit her, and it was just really sad because that pretty mom wasn't there anymore. Because I always thought, if only I had my mom, everything would be all right. If only I could have lived with her. If only this, if only that, then I would be okay. And you know, it just wasn't the way I thought it was going to be. And it was so sad. All I remember wanting to do is drink to forget about this. And I left there, you know, thinking this isn't it either. And why? And what kind of God would do this? And it was just real sad. And so I met this guy in a bar. Well, I actually owned the bar. And we fell in lust and you know, how that goes. And, you know, I thought, you know, I probably need to settle down and get married. So we got, you know, free beer and pool the rest of my life. I do. Yeah, he had a really great bar. And so, you know, that didn't last because I'm so very sick. I mean, what am I bringing to the situation? Me. Alcoholism. You know, insanity, insecurity, jealousy, you know, rage. I'm bringing nothing to the situation and I want it to work and I want a family. And when things were real bad between he and I, we were married a whole 5 months at this point and it wasn't working out. And I got a call that my mother was very, very ill in Dallas, Texas. That's where she lived. So I went to Dallas, Texas from California and where I lived. And I went in the room and she had tubes running in and out of her. And I don't know if you've ever seen anybody die from cirrhosis. Alcoholism is a horrible way to go. And she was all yellow and swollen. And I just looked at her and, you know, I felt so bad. And I thought, you know, what kind of God would take a mom away from their kids? And I hadn't, you know, this thing with God was gone. And I remember hating God and thinking, there's no loving God here. You know, she was a wonderful woman. Why would God let this happen? And why would God, you know, all those things that I go through and that stuff that's all inside me. And her sisters came, you know, from where they were. And, you know, she was dying. She was in a coma. And she didn't even know I was there. And I'd read to her and talk to her. And I loved her. You know, I loved her. And we were sitting outside. The doctor had asked us to leave. He was examining her, and we were sitting outside of the doorway, and my aunts were going. They were telling me stories about when I was a little tiny girl, and you know that junk's just going on inside. It's like, well, where were you? How come y'all didn't come get me? You know, and where'd you go? And what kind of life have you had? And did you ever think about me? You know, and that junk is just going through me. I mean, I have no program of recovery whatsoever. I've just got insanity going on. And the nurse came out and said, you need to come in right now. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know. We went in there and my mother was sitting up, you know. And the first thing she said to me is, will you forgive me? And I said, yes. And I'm so glad I did. My mother died 3 days later. But we got 3 days together. And that's from that God that I don't think loves me. You know. She never meant for her life to turn out that way. I know that today. I know she never meant it. She probably was going to be, well, she was a nurse. She was a surgical nurse. She's probably just going to go, you know, set the world on fire one day, you know, like I was. And she never meant to hurt me. She used to get up in the middle of the night and go down the street. I remember this, and help little kids that were sick. Mothers would call and say, "Oh, my son's so sick, my daughter's so sick, you know. Could you come? Could you please come?" She'd get up in the middle of the night and go do that. You know, she would do anything. On Christmas, we used to go to a nursing home because she was so worried none of those people would have anybody to visit them. You know, my mom wasn't a bad person. She was a good person. She just had alcoholism, and she could not or would not see this way of life. And I see so many people that I love today that I get to sponsor sometimes, or I just see them coming in and out of my meeting, or I go to their funeral. And I love them just like I loved her. And I know that because I love them and we try to help them, that's not going to keep them sober either. But it's so hard. You just want to help them. And my daddy used to say, "Sheila, you can't give them the want to. You can only show them the way." You know, and I couldn't, no one could give my mother the want to. Alcoholics Anonymous had been, tried to help her a couple of times, and she just couldn't or wouldn't see this way of life. I went back to California, and I called my father, who I was not having much of a relationship with at all. And I asked him, I said, "Dad, would you please help me?" And he said, "Yes." I said, I got to go bury Mom, and we're going to bury her in Oklahoma. I said, "Would you please come and help me?" And he said, "Yes, I would." And he hadn't been married to her in years. And we came back to Oklahoma. My dad, you know, he had talked to his sponsor, and his sponsor said that would be the right thing to do. My father, you know, that's the kind of AA member was. He didn't do it because he felt or didn't feel. He did the right thing, regardless of how he felt. And I always respect him for that. You know, my feelings aren't fact. You know, his sponsor said, "Of course you'll go. That's the right thing to do." However uncomfortable, and it was uncomfortable. He was going to see all his ex-in-laws, and they blamed him, and da-da-da-da. And, you know, it was an awful thing, but it really turned out good. My brother came, my dad and I, my brother were standing around the graveside, and we were just standing there, and I thought, you know, this is the first time I ever remember us all together, and I think she would have liked that. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous was already doing things for my life before I ever got here, you know, and I'm so grateful to the people that got Chips, you know, with 20 plus years of sobriety. Thank you so much for preserving this for me. Thank you so much. Thank you for not watering it down so that I get the real deal, because I'm a real alcoholic. The people that stayed here and didn't leave after their birthday, we are real alcoholics, okay? You are the alcoholic of my type, okay? That's what the book talks about. I love that. You know, isn't that funny? He put that in there, 60 plus years ago? Alcoholic of our type. I don't know if he knew something was coming down the pike or what. He was such a visionary. Wasn't that man a visionary now? And so I went back to California, and I buried my mother, and I divorced that him, you know, and just went on reckless abandon. I got into cocaine and alcohol. This is the meaning of AA. I will not disrespect it, but I did do outside issues. Ha ha. But I'm an alcoholic. I'm just an alcoholic. I love doing anything that helped me get there. And I also like things that enable me to drink longer, and that little white stuff that whips up your nose, and smoke it or whatever we do with it. Anyway, that stuff kept me awake long enough not to go into blackout so I could drink plenty of booze. And I loved anything that enabled my drinking. Even hymns that enabled my drinking. Not many did. I just went on reckless abandon, and you know, I don't share a lot of details from the podium. I don't think that's the place for a woman to take a fifth step. I'll share anything one-on-one, and I just went crazy, and it was just, it was not pretty. And I ended up, pregnant with another him. I found another him. Of course, I have to find another him. And, you know, I got pregnant, and he didn't want to be, and I was 8 months pregnant, and he moved out and left, you know, it was just one of those things. You know, I wanted someone to do what I wanted them to do. And through inventories, I have looked back, and that man, he did not do anything wrong, really. You know, I needed him. I needed, you know, I manipulated that. I got pregnant, you know. And yes, he had a part in it, of course, but, hello, you know, I know that what I did, you know, and this is rigorous honesty stuff. This isn't I'm the victim. I was a volunteer. I'll go, honey. You know, I was sick as they were. And, you know, when I look back on inventories, you know, he did not want to get married. He did not want a child. He wanted to go have some fun. He was just goofing around, you know. He just wanted a fun partner to go run with, you know, and then I wanted to settle down and stuff, and he couldn't do it. He just could not do it. And you know, and I don't blame him today. I feel sorry for him that he's missed out on one great young man. My son was born, and I thought he was the most beautiful, beautiful baby in the whole wide world. You know, I adored him. I loved him. I was never going to drink again. I wasn't going to drug again. I wasn't going to do anything. I was going to be the best mom. I was going to work really hard, and I was going to get him a college education. And I really meant that. I meant every word of that. And he fixed me for about 2 weeks, and I couldn't take it. The insanity returned. The insanity returned, and I had to drink. And the insane thought won out. That's what it says in the big book. The insane thought won out. And it did, and I drank again. I drank and used drugs while I was pregnant, and that's something I kept secret a long time until I got to you all. And I was several months sober, and a lady shared that with me, and I was so overwhelmed. You know, and that's why I share that, because, you know, I know what that feels like inside. It took me a long time to be okay with that, and I'm still not wonderfully okay with it, but there's a line in the big book, and it says, cling to the thought, and it was in today's daily reflections, and it's one of my favorite. Cling to the thought, left in God's hands, the dark past will be our greatest possession I have. It will help, I'm paraphrasing, it will help you avert misery and death for others. And that's what I have to hang on to. So see, it's just not all about me. Darn. But it's not. You know, it's not all about me. It's not about me getting what I need or me and my issues. It's not about that anymore. After I'm here a while, it's about me, you know, sharing that dark past, and then I'm free. And I never even really realized that. But if I give it and I help you, and I get, because nothing can make me feel good about drinking and drugging while I was pregnant. Nothing. I can't justify it away. I can't issue it away. I can't do any of that stuff away. It hurts. It makes me feel sad. But when I share that stuff and another woman says the same thing, this is like Oklahoma. There are bugs flying in here. Anyway, but if I share it with someone else, it's like I do get a healing, you know, because if I leave it in God's hands, anything left in God's hands, it's going to be all right. Because see, the God of my understanding, he'll turn bad to good. Nothing is ever really bad because God always will turn it to do the right thing. Anything that's, I heard a man named Keith Carpenter, he's a wonderful AA member, and he says, you know, he talks about this little prayer he has, and it's about, you know, it's what it is, you know, I've got character defects, and, you know, help me, you know, with the seemingly bad that is necessary for my growth. And some, there's been so many seemingly bads in sobriety that I thought I would just, this is unnecessary. This is unnecessary. And it was necessary for my growth. And I'm so grateful today that I stayed sober long enough and I stuck around to watch and look back in retrospect to see the things that were necessary for my growth. That God did help me accept the seemingly bad, you know, and those things. I had this baby, and I found another him and moved to Oceanside. It was a Marine this time. I thought, well, heck, they take care of the whole country. Surely handle me. Oh, he was he looked like a Greek god, honey. Anyway, and he drank, and I drank, and I outdrank him, and he made him mad, and we just fought, and it was horrible. It was no good. And I had this baby, and his ex-girlfriend, who was a whacker, a wave, came back into town, and they ran off together. And me and my son, we went and lived with this girl who was a hairdresser. Her name was Karen May, and I cannot find her. And I understand she moved to this part of the country. She probably is an Al-Anon meeting right now as we speak. Anyway, I hope she is. But she's one of the people who saved my life, you know. I mean, if there weren't people that took care of us, we wouldn't have lived long enough to get here. That's what Bill Wilson used to say. He was so grateful for those people. She let me live in her house. I was did nails. I was manicured. She was a hairdresser in the same salon. She let my son. We slept on the floor in her house. And then I got a job cocktailing at night because, you know, I got to be out and I got to be in the bar. So I got to be back. I got to drink. And that's a good excuse. And I'd come in about 6 o'clock in the morning. Now I got off at 1 or 2 or 12 or whatever. But I drank all night and used drugs all night. So I'd come in when the house would be starting to awake, and she'd watch him all night for me because they'd be sleeping. And I'd pretend I'd already been in, and it's one of those, you know, those lies and those stories and that mess. Yeah, I just lived in that stuff. I lied so much I didn't even know if I was lying. I thought, did I lie? I don't know. Who knows? You know, was that a lie? Might be. I don't know. You know, I just lived like that. It was like, oh, it's just insanity. And so she caught me coming in, and she said, you know, if it weren't for that baby, you wouldn't be living here. You know, that's why you're here, because of that baby. She said, you need to call somebody. I know your mother's dead, but you need to call your dad or something. I thought, oh, she doesn't understand. My dad's a member of AA. He's still very active, and he might throw a big book at me or something. So, you know, I don't want to, like, confess to dad. And, you know, we still don't get along because, you know, because I know he knows, and I've got a secret, and I don't want to tell anybody, and I live far away from him, and I would go months and months and months without talking to my father. There were times my dad didn't even know where I was, you know, and that's, what kind of daughter is that? You know, I wasn't a very good daughter, and I called him, and he had moved to Oklahoma, and he met this woman in Al-Anon, and they fall in love, and my father was married 5 times, so I was kind of like, okay, and he said, Sheila, I've met, she's wonderful, she's an Indian princess, and I said, oh, again, okay, and, you know, and he loved her, and they loved each other, and they moved to Oklahoma, and I called anyway, a series of events led, and he said, Sheila, I'll give you a one-way ticket to Oklahoma. I don't know what's going on in your life, but I'm concerned. And, you know, he didn't send me money. He didn't put me in a treatment center. He didn't do anything like that. Because you'd have a different speaker tonight had he done that. Had he had fixed the problem with money or got me an apartment or something, I wouldn't be here tonight. I don't think I would, because that's what I really wanted him to do. I was trying to give him one of those stories and then maybe he'd send me some money. Because, not that he ever did, but, you know, hey, it was worth a try anyway. He invented tough love. And he said, I'll give you a one-way, non-refundable, non-cashable, by the way, I tried, and ticket. he's a drunk. He was so smart. And I ended up in Oklahoma, and I've lived on the sunny beaches of California. What the heck am I doing in Oklahoma? You know, back home, my roots, and I thought, oh, I'm going to die here. Tornado's going to suck me up, and I'm going to die. Oh, I'm so scared of the tornadoes, and it was October when I moved there, so then the snow hit, and I couldn't drive. Oh, it was just a mess. And I got drunk one night. My dad, I had to go to some Al-Anon meetings because I lived with them for a while. And you, in my parents' home, you have to go to something. And I knew Al-Anon still drank, so I'll go to that. It's true. I'm just telling you the truth. So I went to that. And then I got drunk. Well, my Al-Anon sponsor, she said, you want to go out for a cocktail? And I said, oh, I'd love to. And she unleashed the devil. I had not had a drink in several weeks, and I was a maniac. And so she would go up and get us a drink, and I'd get the barmaid over and, like, down about 6 shots of whatever. And she'd come back, and I'd be, you know, oh, let's sip some wine. And she could not understand, because she kept saying to her Al-Anon sponsor, I don't know how she went into a blackout. Because every time she'd go to the bathroom or something, and I would be downing drinks, it was just crazy. Well, and I went into a blackout. She says I broke a bathroom door at a taco place or something. And she got scared, and the police were coming. And I don't remember any of that. I don't know. She probably made it up. I kept saying, well, I just don't remember doing that, you know. So, and unfortunately, or fortunately, as really, truly fortunately, her Al-Anon sponsor was my stepmother. And, of course, you know, you can't keep that stuff, and if you feel uncomfortable inside, you've got to go tell somebody, I don't understand this, because you don't tell anybody where I've just come from, or you get yourself killed. But they, you know, it's dumb to tell on people. And she told on me, and I was really mad. I was like, these people tell on each other. And Lord, and the truth. And it was just a bad, bad experience. So anyway, my dad got wind of it, and he owned a pawn shop, and he called me and said, I want you to come down to the pawn shop. And I went down to his pawn shop, and he said, you know, Sheila, and he didn't yell at me, and I thought he was going to yell at me, and he didn't. He said, Sheila, you know, I love you, and I think you're just like me. And he said, I am so sorry for your life. I'm so sorry for the things that have happened in your life. But I cannot stand by and watch you do the same thing to your son that was done to you. And he said, I don't know what you're going to do, but you've got to do something to change your life. And he said, I love you. And he had a tear coming down his face. And I thought, because my dad's a screamer. He's a yeller, you know. He's a big man, you know. And he wasn't yelling or anything. And I got to hear him talk later on, years later, and he had prayed. He'd ask God, please, God, don't let me hurt her. Don't let me yell at her. Don't let me scare her away. Please give me the right words. And that's what God does. You know, and that's the kind of man he was in AA. And I would love to say I ran out that day and went to a meeting, and I did not. I went and got drunk. I'm like any respectable alcoholic would. I thought, well, at first I felt really bad. Then I thought, of course, then my I thought, which is the big thing, which is the terrible thing. I thought, that SOB, I mean, look who he's been married 5 times. So I start taking his inventory in my head, and then I go get drunk. And so that's what it'll get. Taking somebody else's inventory isn't really good. I found out before I even got here again. And but I got sober when I was 20 years old. I did not tell you that. I got sober at 20 years old. I was sober 9 months in the Pacific group. I'd woke up in a field in between hymns. Not literally, but I mean, that would be really good. No, not really good. But, oh, you know, I think the altitude is getting to me here. In between boyfriends, I'd gotten drunk and got upset and something and went into a field. And then I went to my dad's AA birthday, and I really identified with the speaker that night. And I started going to meetings, and I was real concerned. It really was. And then I realized that I really probably really wasn't an alcoholic, that I just woke up in a field, and it was no big deal, and I was making a big deal. I'm nothing. I mean, that's my mind. So at 20 years old, I left AA. I was, and I had an 8-year slip, and at this time I, just a little 8-year slip. And then I ended, you know, of course I'm back in Oklahoma, and, I get drunk one night, and we have a party at our apartment, my roommates, and, my son, I put him to bed. I came to the next morning, I have my clothes on, I have mud all over me, I'm a mess, and I can't remember things or anything, and I remember I put him to bed, but I couldn't find my son. It was December 15th, 1984. Very, very cold in Oklahoma on December 15th. It's in the 20s. And little children have been known to go outside and they freeze to death and die. And I could not find my son. And I thought, my God, he's gone outside and froze to death. And I was looking for him, and I looked in the bedrooms. I could not find him. And I was screaming and hysterical. And my roommate came out and said, what was wrong with you last night? You were insane. And she said, I said, I can't find Brad. I can't find Bradford. And she said, Sheila, he's right here. And he was walking down the hall, and I never want to forget. I never, ever want to forget that. I don't ever want to feel that that is pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. That's that. That's what that is. Because I feel horrible because I've done this. Because I'm sober, somewhat. Sober. And I hate myself. And that little baby, he was just a little baby. He was just a little kid. He wasn't even 2 years old. And he was walking down the hall, and he had yellow pajamas on with the feet in it. And he puts his hands up, and he said, Mom. And I picked him up, and I grabbed him, and I said, Mommy's going to get help. Please help me. Please, God, help me. And I, you know, because I had gone to some open meetings of AA, thank God people came up and they weren't so busy in their own lives at their meeting. They weren't so busy talking about themselves that they noticed that I had this funny look on my face. You know, we spot each other real easy. These women came over to me, and they were always nice to me, and I really liked them. And this one lady named Mary gave me her number, and she said, if you ever need me, I want you to call me. And she'd call me every once in a while. I'd call her. And that morning I got up, and I found that number, and I called her, and she wasn't home, but her husband was. I'm so glad. It was a Saturday morning. It was very, very early. I'm so glad they didn't have their answering machine on. Yeah. So glad they picked up their phone, because I don't know if I'd have called back. I hope I would. But I don't know. See, I don't ever have to guess anymore, because I didn't have to call back. And he said, is Mary there? He said, no, Sheila, she's not. He said, I know it's you. And I said, well, he said, are you drunk right now? He said, I know a little bit about you more than I should. And he said, I know your daddy really well. And I said, oh. He said, are you drunk right now? I said, well, I'm just really bad hungover. And he said, I want you to get your butt in the car and you get to our house. And I went to their house, and he sat me down with a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, a cup of coffee, and a kitchen table. And he 12-stepped me. And I will be so ever so grateful. She came home a little later on, and, you know, I got it with both barrels, and it was just, you know, good God. I was like, you know, after a while, you're just going, oh, my God, I think I'm going to die here. And they go, do you need to throw up? And they're real into this, you know. I'm like, well, yeah, you know, okay, yeah, well, it's fine, throw up. And I'm like, okay, you know, would you like me to do it here on your kitchen table, or would you, you know. I mean, they were just so, they 12-stepped. I mean, it was, treatment centers weren't the thing yet. They were coming of age. It was in 84. So they were coming out, but they weren't, we were still doing 12-step calls. I've done lots of 12-step calls in my first 2 years of sobriety, you know. I don't do as many today, but I did a lot then. Boy, they had the honey and the orange juice, and my God, it was, you know, that'll make you sick. I mean, it does. It's like, oh, you know, and it's like, okay, I've had enough honey. And they said, you need to be at the meeting tonight. And I said, well, I'm not going to go to that meeting. See, that's where my dad goes to meetings, and I need my space. I need my own meetings. I need my own AA. Okay, I'm already taking my life back, am I not? Yeah, I'm ready to do, I'm dying here, and now I'm going to take my life back. And he said, Sheila, that's a really good group. There's a lot of structure. There's structure. There's good sponsorship. There's commitment. There's accountability, and you need all those things. And I said, well, you know, I don't know. And he said, what are you afraid? Are you afraid your dad's going to be right? Yeah. And I said, yeah. And he said, that's pride and ego. And he said, you've got to get rid of that or you'll never stay sober. And I said, okay. I said, well, I'll think about it. I'll think about it. You know, and I knew there was an... And it got time to meeting time about 7, 7:15, 8 o'clock is the meeting. And my roommates are... I said, well, I started getting crazy. I wanted to drink and I was crazy. And they said, aren't you going to that meeting? I said, well, I don't have a babysitter for Brad. And they said, we'll watch him. When you're drinking, buddy, you start watching your child to go to your AA meetings. It's time to take a look. It's drinking, okay? Yeah. It's time. And they drank pretty good, if I remember correctly. I went to the meeting. My father was at the meeting, and I remember it was just horrible. I sat way in the back of the room. Hello, everybody back there. I love you all back there, and I can't wait to see you up in the front. Anyway, it happens to the best of us, I swear. Maybe because I can't hear anymore. But I sat in the way back of the room, and they said, is there anybody in their first 30 days of sobriety? Please raise your hand. I was not going to raise my hand. People that 12-step me, you know how they are. They look at you. You know, you feel them. And then you know that, and then you look over. I wonder if they're looking at me. Well, you know, yeah, we've all done this. So he went like that. So I scratched my head is what I did. I went like that. So humble I am at my AA meeting here. And my father was sitting in the second row in the second seat, and he was in the first seat in the second row. And he turned around. And he saw me. He saw me raise my hand, and he got called on. And at this meeting, there are 30 minutes tag participation main speaker. Coffee break main speaker, and he got called on, and he talked about he said, you know, I saw my daughter here tonight. I see her. I saw her raise her hand, and he said, I hope she gets this deal. I hope she can find this way of life. And he said, of all the Christmas presents in the world, this is the best. Seeing my daughter raise her hand, and my heart started to melt. That cold, icy heart starts to melt. And I thought, well, maybe he does care about me. And I started on this journey, and I tell you what, it's been a journey. And I have been so very blessed to be among you, to get to have this life. I have the life today I always wanted. And you all did it. I didn't do anything. I sat in chairs. I got in cars. Get in the car. She's like, okay, get in the car. I hate to get in the car. I hate the car. I want my own car. I want my license back. You know? I was quite the whiner when I got sober. Now I sponsor them. And well, I see there's a few of us in here. I tell you, I got a sponsor, and she let me go because she said, you need more direction I'm willing to give. And then I got arrested. Right after, I mean, drove home, got arrested. I handed my license, happy, joyous, and free, because I'm sober almost 90 days. But I didn't think they had computers in Oklahoma, and I was caught. They do have computers in Oklahoma in case you're going to visit there. They do have them, and they will arrest you for past deeds. The wreckage of my past, and I kept thinking, I'm only on step 3. Well, I didn't even get to 8. You know, I'm not even near it. And I was mad at God. You know, here I'm about to take step 3 with my sponsor, and she lets me go, and then I go to jail. I'm like, oh, so you turn your will and your life over the care of God, and you go to jail. I was in jail. And I was in big trouble, and I had to call my dad, and his wife, Vinoy, answered the phone. My dad's name was Jim Shaw. He was married to Vinoy Shaw. Vinoy answered the phone, and I said, hi. She goes, where are you? And they had my son, Brad, and I said, well, I'm in jail. She said, ah, ha, 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 ha. I said, no, I'm in jail, and it's X amount of dollars to get me out. Blah, blah, blah. So she says, Jim, and Sheila's in jail. And, oh, God. You know, you don't even need the phone, okay? He's screaming, leave her in there, you know? And she goes, and I'm going, I'm sober. Tell him I'm sober. She goes, Jim, she's sober. I don't give a good God. Burp, 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 burp. And I'm like, tell him I'm sober. And the jail lady walks by and goes, who cares? And I said, I care. It's very important to call for bail money and be sober at my house, you know. It works out better that way.
And she said, Jim, we can't, little baby, we can't. I don't go. She goes, see, I'll be there to pick you up, Shanks. I'm like, oh, the black belt Al-Anons, thank God for them. You know, she really has saved me more than you can ever imagine. Oh, thank you, God. I love Al-Anon. I'm really, truly, it has been half of my recovery. And so anyway, so she came and got me and took me to my AA group. Now, I don't want to go to a meeting. I don't want to look at y'all anymore. Step three, BB. I don't want nothing. I want out of here. I am upset. So this one girl, and she said she was there, and my sponsor showed up, and it was just bad. And so then my ex-sponsor, and so anyway, so what happens is I get the sponsor that I'm never going to get. Because I got so incredibly desperate. There was a lady in our group, and she was a hardcore AA, and she did the deal, and I netted it up, and I thought, she's just going to expect a little bit too much out of me. I'll go over here. But I got that sponsor, the one that you say, I'd never get her as a sponsor. I got her, and it saved my life. You know, she went to my arraignment with me, and then after my arraignment, she dropped me off at this stop-and-go thing, and she said, and I owed a lot of money. I'm in big trouble, and if I don't pay it by May, it's March. If I don't pay it by May, I'm going to jail. I've got this baby. It's just bad news. And she said, I said, what are we doing here? And she said, Sheila, you need a paper. You need a second job, honey. You've got to get this paid. And I said, you know, wait a minute. You don't understand. I can't do this. I can't do it. I said, I'm going to get my paycheck Friday, and I'm out of here. I got to go back to California because I can't do this. It's too hard. It's too hard. I know AA works for you all. I believe in it for you, but it doesn't work for me. It's too hard. No matter how much I try, something like this always happens. I live life this way. It's like I'm got a big cloud above me. And she said, I know it seems so bad right now. She goes, but will you believe that I believe that you can have this thing? Will you believe that I believe that it's going to be all right? And if you promise me, will you stay here for 90 days in Oklahoma, do everything I ask you to do, and if at 90 days you haven't gotten something going on and you don't believe in it and nothing good's happening, I'll drive you to the airport. And I thought, you know, I believe. I can believe she believes, but I didn't believe. But I could believe she believed. She was weird enough to believe something like that. That'd be fine. On the 89th day... Yeah, I went to Canyon Conference. Now, I worked 2 jobs with no car, went to meetings, and took my son to daycare, all with no car. And when a woman comes to me and says I couldn't get a ride to a meeting, my sponsorees go, you've got the wrong one. Don't do that. And then they all go, they make fun of me anyway. Because I did. I worked 2 jobs. I got up in the morning and I got a ride to daycare with my son. Then I went to my first job. I got out of my first job, picked my son up, went to a different daycare or babysitter, went to my second job. After the meeting that night, I would get done with my job and I would go to the meeting. If the meeting had started, I would go anyway, or I would wait till the meeting was over not to disrupt the meeting, and I would fellowship with people, go to coffee afterwards. And that's what I had to do. I did that day in and day out for several months. And I paid all those tickets off, you know, and I got my license back and got insurance for the very first time. Never had insurance before. I got insurance, had a $250 car, you know, but I was happy. Because I had finally completed something. I've always found someone to pay it, do it, whatever, and it gave me incredible self-worth. You know, and those are the things that have given me self-worth. You know, I've been told if you want self-esteem, do esteemable things. You know, instead of always looking for it. I love you guys today. I mean, I have men in this program that are my buds. They are good friends of mine. And they have taught me that men and women can be friends together and have a friendship, you know. But I was always looking how to be a woman through a man, you know. And I learned it through ladies. Those ladies that I was so afraid of that had those little flat shoes and a long skirt. Well, hello. And I made fun of them because I knew I could never be that. You know, if you didn't wear tight jeans and have your midriff showing, you were worthless to me. You were goody good or something. You know, and then I don't think that way today. You know, that's my contempt. You know, today, you know, I've learned so much that women in Alcoholics Anonymous and the men would come up and tell their stories and I would feel better about my dad, or I'd feel better about one of the hymns, or you know, I'd have hope for a friend of mine or my brother. You know, and that's what you all have done for me. Incredible things. I kept doing the things I was supposed to do and went to this conference. I had 89 days. Well, actually, I had almost almost 90 days from my arrest date. It was 89 days. And I went to this conference called the Canyon Conference. It's outdoors. It's beautiful. It's in Oklahoma. It's really pretty. And there were these great speakers, and they got up there, and they weren't just speakers. They were real members of AA, and they didn't just talk it. They walked it. And I started feeling something. You know, I was on the fence of AA. I was just kind of hanging out, you know, kind of, well, I'll just hang out, you know. And I was on the fence of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I heard these women, and they told my story. You know, and I looked at them, but they didn't look like my story anymore. And they had dignity, and they were living the life, and they were helping others, and they had purpose. Gosh, I wanted some purpose. I wanted purpose in this life. And this man would sing before the conference. It was a kind of an outdoor type thing. And before AA, any meeting started, he would sing beautiful songs. And it was my uncle. And he sang this one song called New Lives for Old, Warm Hearts for Cold. And I started feeling really gushy inside. And boy, I did not like that. Let me tell you what. I mean, I was about to cry and stuff. It was just really bad. And I was being transformed, I believe, by the God of my understanding. I believe I was having some sort of an awakening. And at the end of that conference, I knew I was sitting there and I was listening to someone, and it was just real peaceful, and there were birds singing, and it was just this thought. It was like knowledge, and that's the only way I can describe it. I don't know what it was, but it was like knowledge. I was filled with the knowledge, and that's how I felt. I knew God wanted me sober. I knew God wanted me to stay in AA, and I knew everything would be all right. And I only felt like things were all right when I was drunk. I knew everything would be all right. And the amazing thing is that that conference was started the year that I was pregnant with my son and had my child. And I was not married. I was having a baby out of wedlock. And my father started that conference. I'm so glad he kept going to AA. I'm so glad he didn't try to fix me. He loved me. He was kind to me. He tried, but he didn't come out. He started a conference in Alcoholics Anonymous. He went to his meetings every night of the week. He didn't throw money at me. You know, he said, I love you and you got to do your deal. And it was so incredible because the conference that he started, he had no idea that 2+ years later, his daughter would be sitting there with 6 months of sobriety on the fence and hear the message through that conference. I'm overwhelmed. Isn't it neat what God can do if we just sit back and let Him? I am convinced today, people have said it to me all the time, Sheila, just do AA, just do Alcoholics Anonymous. This will, you know, because I'm always wanting to work on something. You know, it's like sometimes you just need to get over here and help somebody, and this will be worked on by God. You know, Sheila, just get over here and do Alcoholics Anonymous and let God take care of this. And those things have worked for me better than anything. I got married in Alcoholics Anonymous to a wonderful man. He is not a member of this fellowship, but he's a friend of AA, I like to say. I got pregnant right away, and I know. And I was kind of upset. You know, it's like we kind of hadn't planned it that quick. And I was kind of, he said, Sheila, we're married. I go, oh, yeah, I can call Dad. You know, I was so happy, you know. Oh, God. Doing it a different way today. We're married first. And, you know, oh, it's wonderful. And so my father was unfortunately the very last person to know I was pregnant with my first child. In fact, I never even told him. I was 5 months pregnant and somebody wrote him a letter back in Oklahoma. You know, that's the kind of relationship we had. And I said to Dave, you know, as a living amends, I've made verbal amends and I've made amends to my father, but as a living amends, could I let him be the very first person to know that I'm pregnant with Daniel? And he said, well, I didn't know it was Daniel then, but and he said, yeah, you can. And I did. And I said, Daddy, I want you to be the very first person to know that, you know, I'm having a baby. And he was so excited. He said, well, by God, that's just great, you know. And he said, well, I'm just so proud. And, you all gave us the most incredible relationship. We both absolutely fell in love with each other. And Alcoholics Anonymous did it. I owe you everything. My father died 2 years ago this month. And I miss him so much. But I know when I come here and I'm with you that I'm kind of with him still. My father had 29 years of sobriety. He died 1 month before his month birthday. I mean, his 30-year birthday. 1 month before his 30 years. He had the same sponsor, Clancy I, for 29 years. He went to meetings all the time. And I sit in a meeting in Oklahoma, and I look across the room, and there's a guy he used to sponsor. And there's guys he sponsors and guys he sponsors. And so he's left me quite a legacy. But I still miss him. Because he wasn't just my dad, he was my old-timer too. And I love the old-timers in AA. I used to just make them cranky when I was new, but I've really made up for it. But I love them. I'm so glad they stuck around and he did the deal. You know, when he was dying, I just said to him, I said, you know, Dad, I said, I can't imagine my life without you. And he said, I know. And he said, but Sheila, you must accept God's will for me. And I thought, wow. And he said, not just God's will for you, but this time you got to accept God's will for another person. He said, I believe I'm absolutely in God's will. He's, I don't think God gave me this, but if he didn't want me to come home, he'd get rid of it. And he said, my mission's over, and I'm handing the baton over to you. And please stay on the firing line of Alcoholics Anonymous and give this thing away so that others may live. Gosh. And I loved him so much. And he was surrounded by sponsorees and me and his wife and the people that loved him. When he died, I mean, he just went real quiet. And I just believe he's up there with Chuck C, and he went and got him a cup of coffee, I bet you. And we said that night, he's the newcomer in the meeting, you know. And I know he's okay. I just miss him. When I was pregnant with this baby, I found out that there were two babies. There were twins. And in my seventh month, we went for a checkup. And one was a girl and one was a boy. And they told us that the little girl was very sick and that she was sick. And I said, what do you mean sick? And they said, I don't think she's going to live. And the next, that Monday, the weekend, Alcoholics Anonymous came to my house. You know, my friends came to my house. They loved me and everything else. And what they did was they cared about me. And that Monday morning, I went to the doctor, this neonatal doctor, and to see if there was anything they can do. And he said, I'm so sorry. She didn't survive the weekend, you know. And so I had to carry that baby until the end of the pregnancy and the little boy was okay. And then we knew the other one was a little boy, and his name was Daniel. And I carried both those babies. He was born a month early, had some breathing problems, but you know, he's fine today, and he's 7 years old. And you know, and I'm so blessed. You know, I'm so blessed, and I know that you all. You know, people prayed for me. People I didn't even know prayed for me. That knew somebody. That knew. You know, oh my gosh, I had phone calls. I had people send me cards. Where in the world, except Alcoholics Anonymous, I have never been so loved in my life. Never been so loved. And I'm so glad that I can see the things today because of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, because of the forgiveness, because I wanted to forgive. And God gave me the forgiveness. I don't have the power to forgive. I don't believe I have the power. But I do believe that if I take right action, I used to get up in the mornings, and one of the things I had to do when I lived with my parents, I had to bring my dad's paper in. I hated bringing that paper in. He and I were both morning people, and we were up together alone, and it was very frightening to be with him. And I was brand new sober, and I would make you drink hot tea, and I'd put the kettle on, and I'd bring in his paper. And when he was real, real sick, and I went to visit him, I brought him his paper and put his tea on. And I was so privileged to get to do it. And that's how we started to love each other. And we only were allowed to talk about sports. We both love sports. We'd talk about sports and the weather, and that would be all. You know, we started out very slowly, and God brought the forgiveness, and God did the healing. I didn't want it at first, and then I did want it, and God gave it to us. And I believe God has that power. I don't have the power. God has the power, but I can take right action. I am just blessed. I have a blessed life. I sponsor girls I love to death. My sons today are healthy boys. They're good boys. You know, last night I was running around taking my son and his best friend Jason. I'm taking them to see from their girlfriend's house. You know, taking them up. First we go to here, and then we go there, and then I'm taking them home, and I'm driving, and I thought, you know, I get to be in this car with my son. I get to go help him buy those presents. I get to watch him play baseball. I get to answer the phone AA hotline when the coach called to tell him he made Legion ball. He said, oh, I'm sorry, I have the wrong number. Click. And I said, oh my gosh, I hope that wasn't that coach. And Brad goes, Mom. And I go, I got the hotline. What can I say? So he said, so the phone, and I knew it, he called right back, and I go, hello? And he goes, is this the Armstrongs? I go, oh, yeah, it is. Hi. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway. Did you get the AA hotline? I've done that before. Anyway. You know, and he made Legion Ball. You know, oh, it was just, you know, and that's what I get. I get to be in the room with my kids. I get to be with them. My mom didn't get to do that. But I get to be the mom that I always wanted because of Alcoholics Anonymous and because of you and because I'm so incredibly blessed. I sponsor some of the greatest gals in the world. They give me rides to the airport. They give me rides home. They love me and I love them. I get to watch their lives unfold. I get to be there at the birth of their babies and their marriages and hope no divorces yet. But I get to be at all that and I get to be there and I get to be a part of it and I get to see God work. I'm so grateful and thank you all so very much for having me here.